Oh, you can feel it, can't you? The Blue Jays home opener on August 11th, 2020. It's Baseball Central, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. I am in studio in Toronto, and I got the TV feed already going from Salem Field in Buffalo. And just watching Don Mattingly, the manager of the Miami Marlins, basically getting a guided tour of the facility. And Kevin Barker, of course, alongside me. You know, look, this is a, I was going to say it's a moment we've waited for a long time. It's certainly a moment I've waited for, Kevin, because I do want to see, you know, it's one thing to see Salem Field, and it looks great, and they've done a great job. All, you know, everything everybody's talked about from, and you know what Major League players are like, they'll bitch if they don't like something. Everybody seems to think that this thing, you know, the improvements that have been made, that everybody's done as good a job as possible. But really, Kevin, you know, the rubber meets the road when you get on the field, doesn't it? And
well, yeah,
and see how it plays and just see how the field holds up.
Well, I think most of the guys that are in starting lineup have been on this field before, right? It should be nicer. They've corrected what was wrong with the infield, with the bigger lips when it comes to the grass meeting the dirt. They've taken care of that. It's smoother. You're going to get truer hops. It sounds like after watching the video last night of Vladdy going deep to left, where's that finish at, right? He went deep to left and then he went to dead center. Yeah. How about using that finish one time during a game, that kind of thing? So, listen, they seem like they're having fun. They're embracing what's going on with their team. Again, they're young, right? They don't really know any better. They're going to go out there, hopefully get their foot down and get it singing. The one good thing they got going tonight is the guy they paid $80 million to.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you paid him all that money for, right? Is to sort of calm the waters a little bit, get him to go out there and get that. You would assume he's probably in that 90 to 100 pitch range. Hopefully with a younger team that he's facing. You know, the Marlins have some older guys mixed in the middle of the order, but for the most part, they're younger when in places that it matters. Hopefully he can establish fastball in, use it away a little bit, use that devastating arm speed on that changeup, maybe sprinkle in some slow curveballs, get him to the seventh inning, and then turn it over to that bullpen.
You know, Kevin, I was watching some of the stuff on social media. Guys like Nate Pearson, Rowdy Tellez, and you mentioned Vladdy. And, you know, seeing some of the initial comments from the Marlins players that we're going to be hearing from soon. And Don Mattingly, for the record, I mean, Don Mattingly didn't look like he had a problem with anything. He was just kind of making a tour of the park. He just wanted to know sort of where stuff is. Of course, the first thing you notice, the bullpens are on the field, which, you know, I'm old school. I've seen it in many ballparks. I think it's fun. You know,
San Francisco.
Oh,
you like the parking? Yeah, San Francisco's got it. It's the same way there. It's not been an issue.
Yeah, and Tampa's bullpen is kind of in the corner there. So I mean, it's going to be fine in that regard. I wanted to ask you though, Kevin, what are the Blue Jays? And I understand. I don't think this is a question you can't quantify numerically or anything like that, but they are going to play the Miami Marlins tonight. It is their home opener. This will be their home field for the rest of the season. What will the players do to try to make it feel like home, if you know what I mean? The clubhouse is great. The weight room, they took the whole weight room from Toronto down there. You know, the guts of the place seem to be up to major league standards. Again, there's been no complaining about that. It's like anything else. You buy a new car, it looks great, but you're probably going to wait a couple thousand miles before you really know what you have or not. But what do the players got to do to make it feel like home? You know, to make the clubhouse their own.
Okay, 2009, I was with the Cincinnati Reds in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm driving to the ballpark. I look over. I see a Jimmy John's sandwich shop. So, I throw my car over, and I park my car. I go in and get my sandwich. I go to the field. I'm 3-for-4 with an Apu taco with, like, 3 RBIs. So I don't want to rock the boat, right? So the next day I'm on the park. I pull over to Jimmy John's. I go in and get my sandwich. I'm starting to rake, right, doing all these things. And all these guys said, whatever you're eating, don't stop eating it. Well, little did they know that the only sandwich shop in Kentucky I knew about that had hits in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I'm telling you this story, between the lines, it doesn't matter, right? The Blue Jays have done everything possible to accommodate what they're doing off the field when it comes to all those amenities that a big leaguer's getting, right, to sort of take your mind off the game. But it's what you're doing on the way to the game. It's that little coffee shop.
Yeah.
It's that Jimmy John's that got me to the big leagues in 2009. You know, I'm an older guy. It wasn't about mechanics anymore. It wasn't about what I was swinging at. If I could talk myself into just, if I have my Jimmy John's sandwich, I'm going to go to the ballpark and break and go to the big leagues, right? So it's just one of those things where it sort of takes your mind off of it. And most of these guys have played in this park, have played in the city of Buffalo. They know where their, hopefully, little Jimmy John's is at.
Get some beef on
Wild Wings.
Get some beef on
Buffalo Wild Wings. You could do so, right. So this point is, like, you just getting a little bit of a routine where you're eating the same thing. It works at the ballpark because we are superstitious. You know, I wasn't that superstitious of a guy where I was wearing the same socks or the same underwear all the time because I'm a neat freak. I don't like to smell bad, but I can eat the same sandwich all the time. So I did little things like that just to take my mind off of trying to lay off a breaking ball or
right.
hitting a fastball, any of those little things. So I don't know if I answered your question.
You did.
But I think it's more of everything that's away from the field.
What did you get at Jimmy John's? What was your go-to sandwich?
It didn't matter. It got me to the big leagues. I have no idea. It was one of those things where I ate it so much that I was eating, like, you know, give me one, and then the next day give me the other, and then the next day give me that one, and I would just sort of eat whatever because it was working. I was hitting all these home runs, and that was the last time I went to the big leagues.
Did you comp some tickets?
So Jimmy John's, thank you for getting me to the big leagues.
Did you comp Jimmy John's? You give him some tickets? You take care of your people?
I don't think so, though. I don't think so. It's all about me, Jeff. You know that.
Oh, I know that. Believe me. That's why you and I get along so much. I mean, you know what I say, Kevin? I'm the only one I've ever loved.
That's it. Get in line, buddy.
So it's interesting hearing you say that because, you know, I remember John Tavares, of all people, and I know people are going, why are you bringing John Tavares into this to make us feel bad?
Why would you do that?
Well, no, but here's the thing, because I covered hockey games in Long Island at Nassau County Coliseum. I used to think the place was a dump. And, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time in Long Island. I'd be lying if I said I did, but it was interesting. John Tavares got traded to Toronto, and I remember him answering questions about why guys, like, there are guys who like playing in Long Island. He said, well, there's a lot of kind of little places. You're driving to practice in the morning. I can stop and get a coffee. They know what I like. I know the woman serving. And I think we sometimes forget that there are those things. Like, we all got our locals. I got a bar I like to go to just sit and have a couple of quick beers, maybe watch a game, and bugger off. I don't want to talk to anybody. You know, talk to the bartenders, great. That's fine. We've all got our little places to go. And they do become a part of your life if you are a ball player. You know, the coffee shop, we may roll our eyes, but the coffee shop down the street, that could be where you go and have your coffee, maybe read a paper or go online. Nobody reads a paper anymore. Take care of social media and that. It's important for guys to have those little touchstones that kind of create a sense of not a sense of awareness, but a sense of comfort, right? Like, this is mine.
Yeah.
This is
Jimmy
mine.
Jimmy John's in 2009 was my foundation. That sounds silly because I had been playing professional baseball forever before 2009, right? Mm-hmm. Why would you need Jimmy John's to get hits? That wasn't it. It was the fact that when I was on the way to the field early in the season, I might have been struggling before that. I know it was like the first 10 games of the season, and just so happens when I pulled over that day, I had a big day, and it's one of those things. Now I have to leave early enough from my house just so I can pull over. The sandwiches are probably not even that good, but who cares? It's Jimmy John's, and I got a chance of hitting a home run
We better get Tayo. I hope Jimmy John's still exists, and we better get a freaking ad out of this.
Yeah, Louisville, Kentucky.
Kevin Barker and Jeff Blair on Baseball Central. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News will join us in a few minutes, and we'll talk to Mike. Look, Mike spent more time in that ballpark. Mike and Ben Wagner probably spent more time in that ballpark than anybody we know. So we'll talk to Harrington about about that particular situation. Ross Atkins did a media availability earlier today, Kevin, and one of the topics of discussion, of course, is something we've only talked about, I don't know, probably 80% of the time in this show, mm-hmm. and it's Vladdy Jr. and his slow start. And Ross Atkins, the general manager of the Jays, addressed it a little bit today. I want to play the clip for you and for our listeners, and I want to get your feedback on what Ross said, because I don't think I've heard Ross talk about Vladdy this way before. So, Derek Brandeo, can you play the clip, please?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a fair question. Vladdy has not traditionally been a guy that, has been as aggressive as he's been and chased as much as he's chased. And he's put the ball in the air a good bit more. So, I think it's back to the first thing that I mentioned, that one of the biggest differences, not only is it talent and the power and the shape of pitches, but it's also the ability to consistently execute and game plan and prepare for different swings and approaches. And Vladdy will adjust. He has the innate ability to manipulate the bat and the bat path and make consistent contact. And I think really the biggest factor, it's not a significant fundamental adjustment. It's not a significant mental adjustment. It really is for him to get more confident so that he is sticking to his plan and approach and getting deeper into counts and swinging at balls that he can drive and advantage counts. So I think once that happens, that talent level and that innate ability to hit, you're going to see a different walks and strikeout line than we're seeing right now for him, or just swing and miss line.
The Toronto Blue Jays. Kevin, your thoughts on that? Because I found that interesting, because again, not having played the game and hearing what you've said about Vlad, and hearing what other people have said about Vlad, it's kind of the first time I've heard somebody explain to me one of his strengths. The innate ability to manipulate the bat. So talk to me a little bit about one, what that means.
Yep.
Again, I haven't played the game. A lot of our listeners mm-hmm. haven't. The ability to manipulate the bat, what that means. And yep. to what Ross Atkins' comments say to you.
I talk about it all the time. It's getting in an athletic position to allow you to use your bottom hand that leads. It's like your steering wheel. Your bottom hand is the steering wheel to lead the knob of the bat to the pitch. He's really good from that conversation at taking his eyes to the baseball, right? The barrel's going to follow where my eyes want it to go. The ball's coming. We talk about Randall Grichuk all the time, sometimes swinging on the same plane no matter what the pitch is, right? And if you're throwing it where he's swinging, he's going to hit the ball hard. Mm-hmm. Well, he's saying that Vladdy, right, adjust and everything when he's in an athletic position with his lower half, and he's not. Like, you can spin this and say it any, smart way you want to say it. He always does not get in an athletic position to allow him to do just exactly what Ross said right there, that he's really good at doing. And Marquise Grissom used to always tell me when I was struggling, stop trying to get five hits in one at bat. If that doesn't explain Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to a T, by the chasing, by going outside the box, by trying to do too much, scoreboards in the big leagues are huge. Soon as I step in a batter's box, I can peek above the pitcher's head and see that I'm not hitting what I'm supposed to be hitting, and I'm starting to chase hits. This is what I've been always saying. Just get back to doing what you do well. If you don't like the ball middle in, force the ball away until two strikes, have a two-strike approach, and grind out at bats. The more at bats you grind out, and maybe go find your Jimmy Johns. Maybe that'll help too, right? So you just make it a little bit fun every single day and change things up. Listen, the talent's there. He has everything that you could possibly want. You do a couple of things, maybe clean up some conditioning issues that he may have, and start working on his foundation. Guillermo Martinez says the same thing every time you talk about him to every hitter. If his foundation is good because of what his upper half ability is to do, what all these things that everybody's saying that he's good at, he has to have a good foundation. Once he starts having that and can get that foot, that front foot down in an athletic position, all of these other things will take shape, and he'll start swinging at balls that he should start swinging at, and he'll start hitting balls in the air, and he'll start being the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that everybody hopes he'll be.
Mm. So what does that – what does it say to you, though, Kevin, well, we talked about this, right? How we just want to see some example of what everybody told us Vladimir Guerrero was in the minor leagues. And, you know, look, he's had flashes. He had flashes last year where he was okay. But he has never sort of shown us all at once the complete package, I don't think. And this year, there have been games, frankly, where we haven't seen any aspect of that. Do you think he's the type of guy that has been affected by just the lack of rhythm, the lack of routine created by the delay and then by the subsequent days off? You know, we've heard pitchers are creatures of habit and all that, but do you think for a hitter like Vladdy, this has impacted that in some way as well?
I'm not sure. I think it more so for me, 95% of it, he's facing talent he's never faced before.
There you go.
Guys that are capable of, in fastball counts, flipping you a nasty slider middle away for strike two, right? Or falling behind 2-0, which in a minor league level, that's automatic for sure, a fastball count, because you never want to walk nobody, right? Mm-hmm. Walks in the minor leagues are no-no. Do you think a pitcher nowadays in 2020 cares if he walks you? No, it's the three true outcomes, right? The yep. pitcher's no different. He'd rather strike you out or walk you. He doesn't want to give up a home run. So it's, you know, it works both ways when it comes to that. I just think if he simplifies this thing, I know I keep saying this over and over, if he could work on the foundation and just swing at what he knows that he can hit hard. I laughed when I saw him yesterday on that Zoom thing or whatever that was on the internet when he was getting to that big finish. Mm-hmm. And I yelled out loud and Hazel was like, "What's wrong with you?" I'm like, "We had never seen him do that." Right? Why can't he get to that all the time? So it's, if he could just go back and watch that and look at, you know, how excited he was when Gurriel Jr. and him were running down the first baseline after he was holding his finish when he hit the ball out to center field. It's that kind of thing. You get that little muscle memory that this is how I got to that. This is how I got to that big finish. Now, if I just swing at the right pitch, I can get to that finish all the time and I can be this guy that everybody wants me to be.
The Jays will take on the Miami Marlins tonight in their home opener, 6:30 p.m. first pitch from Salem Field in Buffalo, 5:30, a special one-hour edition of Blue Jays Central on Sportsnet. We will, of course, have first pitch again. I mentioned at 6:30, and, of course, the game will be on TV as well. Hyunjin Ryu on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays. And yes, the Blue Jays will be wearing their powder blue alternate jerseys, which I'm quite excited about. And maybe tomorrow we'll reach out to fans and see what they think about it. 590-590 is the text line. As always, questions for Barker, feel free to submit them. We will go to those questions later on in the show. Mike Harrington covers a ton of stuff for the Buffalo News. Covers the Sabres, obviously. He's also their national baseball writer, covers the Bisons as well. As I mentioned, he and Ben Wagner, they probably know every nook and cranny of Salem Field. Mike Harrington joins us next. Writer's Block continues on Sportsnet. Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Oh, man. You're not going to believe this, Parker. You are not going to believe this. By the way, 590 is the text line. Apparently, there's a Jimmy John's in Erie and Rochester. So let's go. Let's have a road trip. We could have
very nice.
We could have breakfast at Cracky Barrel, and lunch at Jimmy John's.
Chicken and dumplings at Cracker Barrel, and then go the foot down and get it singing sub sandwich.
Not
at Jimmy John's.
Chicken and dumplings, not for breakfast.
No, I don't eat breakfast there. We have like a late breakfast lunch.
Okay, we could do that.
How's that? You can eat it all any time of the day. That's the great thing about Cracker Barrel.
That is true. Yeah, there are no rules at Cracker Barrel, which is one of
Jeffrey,
its strengths.
Jeffrey, Papa Blair can have whatever he wants any time of the day at the Cracker Barrel. Okay.
Hey. Anyhow, I want to thank Kelly Hall for Kelly Hall sent along a link to the Jimmy John's in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep. Give it to the lineup tonight. Tell them to go out and find their Jimmy John's.
There you go. Well, I mean, look, I admit that I am a little skeptical at times about your restaurant recommendations. You know, it's Cracker Barrel does once a year is good on that spring training trip down to Fort Myers with Travis McKenzie. I can watch Travis play the kiddies games and go and buy some candy in the little kiddie store and And anyhow, let's bring in Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Harrington, have you ever eaten at a Jimmy John's?
All right, Barker and Blair, I got some bones to pick here. First of all,
okay.
Jimmy John's. All right, you can have Jimmy John's, but we do not eat at Buffalo Wild Wings in Buffalo. Let's get that straight right now. Okay, there are better places in Buffalo for wings than Wild Wings. So let's just knock that stuff right out.
Well, I'm going to ask you, I'll ask you this, and we'll talk about Salem Field in a minute. But, you know, Barker was making the point that and it's major leaguers and minor leaguers. Guys look for a routine, and part of your routine sometimes is what you do in the morning. You know, the place you stop off for coffee, maybe the place you go for beer after a game and all that. What are the hangouts in Buffalo for ball players? Now, they probably won't be there now, but, I mean, is there like a bar or a coffee shop or something like that, Mike, that you guys will go to, you know, that has sort of become famous for that?
You know, it's interesting because there's really a hangout for the hockey players. The Sabres have a late-night meal place on Virginia Place called Mother's that they've eaten at for many years. I'm not really sure about the Bisons over the years. I mean, there's not a lot of places right by the park, but there's places, you know, a mile or two away and near where some of the guys have apartments. So I've never really heard of anybody having their good luck place in Buffalo. But a lot of guys, you know, some of the Far Eastern players have liked a couple of sushi places in Elmwood Avenue, I'm aware of, more than any other, you know, sandwich shop. And certainly there's no Jimmy John's downtown. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's okay. And I'm going to ask you this question too, because I'm that guy. I'm a big Beef on Weck fan. I'm more of a Beef on Weck guy than I am a Wings. Does that make me a bad person in your mind?
No, that makes you an honorary Buffalonian for sure. And the Beef on Weck at the ballpark is outstanding with Charlie the Butcher, and it's one of the problems. No fans, no concession stands, nothing. I mean, the Blue Jays batting cage is near the Lenovo pizza shop and the Beef on Weck stand, so it's going to be weird getting used to all this.
All right, I want to ask you about the park, because, as I said, we've got a monitor here, and I'm getting a feed from the park. Their grounds crew is working on the field. Don Mattingly's been out, and some of the Marlins coaches, you know, I mean, I'm sure in a lot of cases it's just sort of finding little focal points to position their players defensively and all that. You've seen this park. What's the biggest difference to you? I don't know if you've been down to the clubhouses and that yet, but all the pictures and that you've seen, Mike, you spent so much time in that park. Tell me how its transition appears to you.
Well, first of all, I won't see anything other than the pictures because it's totally off limits to us in that clubhouse level.
Okay.
The biggest thing that I've seen is the way they've been able to repurpose this ballpark and rebrand it for the Blue Jays in about 3 weeks. You go down in that service level and everything is Blue Jay logos, Blue Jay graphics, Blue Jay motivational phrases, and they've reused the space. The home Bisons clubhouse is the room for the Blue Jays coaches' offices. The visiting clubhouse is a stretching room. The entire concourse of that service level has been turned into the Blue Jays' actual clubhouse. They took the mounds, they took the batting cages, put them up in the main concourse. It's really an unusual idea. A lot of the ideas came from Fenway Park, I was told, the way the Red Sox had to redo things, and you can use the space when there's no fans. So they're going to give these players a lot more comfort level than I think the players expected. The weight room is all here from Toronto. The clubhouse is huge. I think guys are going to really be shocked when they get here because, like you guys said earlier, about 18 of these guys have played here, and they're going to recognize the actual field. They're not going to recognize the guts of this place at all. It's going to seem like a completely different place.
Do you think the issue will be down the lines with the mounds with visiting teams? You know, the outfielders, the corner guys like a Gurriel Jr., like Teoscar Hernandez, are used. They played there. They understand right how much to run, how long to run before they're starting to run into those mounds because there's not a whole lot of foul territory down those mounds. You think the visiting team will have an issue with that?
Yeah, they're going to have to get used to it quick. You know, it's going to be reminiscent of what we saw at Wrigley Field with the tight space between the bullpen and the stands. And now Wrigley Field, they took the bullpen mounds out and put them behind the outfield fence. The Jays just said there was nowhere to go with them here. You can't go in left field because you've got the highway behind left field. And right field is where they built the compound for the visiting team. There was just literally nowhere to go. So they're going to have to remind the visiting teams. The umpires are going to have to be cognizant of it. You know, make sure nobody gets hurt tripping over a mound. I mean, we've seen it, like you said, at Candlestick, Oakland, Tampa. MLB is trying to get away from that, but it's going to be in play here.
Mike, how do you think this park will play? And we haven't seen anybody, you know, we haven't seen a game there yet this year. But, I mean, the Bisons have played there before. So does it play differently in the summer than it does in the winter? Does the wind come in differently?
It doesn't necessarily come in differently, but the cold off the lake really impacts players negatively in April and May. And, you know, and it's much better in the summer. It's much truer. The ball flies better. Don't forget, guys, even though it's a Triple-A park, the dimensions mimic Progressive Field in Cleveland. Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro, when he was the Indians farm director, had them adjust their fences here to mimic Progressive Field so they could get a better gauge in their pitchers. So it's major league dimensions. It's pretty close to even Rogers Center, actually. Mm-hmm. So the dimensions are fair. The wind is going to help guys out. Right-handed hitters, it's blowing pretty hard today. It's going to bother left-handed hitters. You're going to lose some balls you might have hit out to right. And that's how it just plays normally anyway.
Mike, I wanted to ask you, I remember when I was covering the Montreal Expos and they were going through the first of about 14 relocation dramas and ownership, you know, ownership issues. Buffalo at one point was very much on the radar of Expos ownership as a potential relocation. The Rich family and the Bronfman family have known each other for years and they've been involved in various charities. Of course, the Rich family, at that point, my God, people in Major League Baseball were sort of actively lobbying for the Rich family to get a team. When did that kind of stop? Like, when did the focus on Buffalo as a potential relocation or expansion site stop?
Well, Bob Rich pretty much had a deal with Charles Bronfman to buy the Expos and move him here, but Bronfman just got cold feet. He didn't want to be looked at as the heel in Montreal to sell the team out, and that never went through. They were a finalist in Buffalo for the 91 expansion, one of six cities. They didn't get it. They went to Denver, who everyone thought was going to get a team, and Miami, who they didn't. So it's pretty ironic. The first game here for Major League Baseball is against the Miami Marlins.
Yeah.
People look at that as Buffalo's team. But after that, after the 93 expansion, you know, Bob Rich predicted that baseball was going to have an Armageddon, and everybody said he was wrong, and they did in 94. It never became a focus again. They have other things, the Rich family, in their lives now. This is a tremendous bonus for them, for all they did for Buffalo, for, you know, 37 years of ownership and 8 years of really pursuing a major league club. This kind of dropped out of the sky to them, you know, but it really isn't an option anymore. And the park, you know, fell behind a little over the course of 30 years, but it's really been brought back up to speed here. And, you know, it's a great AAA facility. And everybody who was saying during the Blue Jays search, well, you know, we don't want to play in a minor league park. What's wrong with it? There was nothing wrong with Salem Field. It was a AAA park. It wasn't a major league park, and that's the difference.
Do you think there will be a home field advantage for the guys who've played in this park? You know, we're talking about guys like Rowdy Tellez has hit a lot of home runs in that park. He's played a lot of games there. Some of the guys haven't. You know, some of the guys kind of catapulted over AAA or just stopped, you know, to dip their toes a bit in AAA on the way up. But do you think there'll be a home field advantage here for guys?
I think there'll be some, especially as they get playing here, just to have one place to play a few days in a row, give them some rhythm. But you're right. There's going to be an advantage. Some of these guys have been here quite a bit. You know, Vladdy, actually, a funny trivia question. Vladdy only had one at-bat in this park last year, and it was a walk in a game that was suspended by rain in April. You know, he wasn't here. He was mostly on the road. But Bo and Cavan were here. Teoscar Hernandez, a lot of these guys. There's going to be a familiarity with the actual field and how the ball plays and how the fences play and the warning track. And they're going to like all the additions down below. I think they'll be very comfortable very quickly here. It's been a tough 3 weeks for this club, and you're not going to make excuses for them, but not many teams, especially young teams, could really handle what they've gone through. Being in one place now for a week at a time, I think, can really turn into a positive for them.
Mike, it was good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much. It should be a lot of fun. I know that, I was texting with a couple of the Jays players, and because I, you know, what you see in social media and that, you wonder what the reaction is. And a couple of them said, hey, we're quite comfortable here. I think you're right. They're just happy to have a place they can hang their hat for a while and maybe figure out some of the quirks of the place and turn it into home field advantage.
No doubt about it. Thanks for having me, Jeff and Kevin, and no chain chicken wings. All right.
Never. Don't worry, man. Take care.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Harrington. Thanks, Mike. The great Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Again, 6:30 first pitch tonight. Yeah, Bark, I was going to say something, but I figured I didn't. Chain restaurants are, well, anyhow. I mean,
Don't overthink it. I did it because I was getting hits.
Yeah.
Because I thought going to that place had hits in it. That's the only reason I kept going there. You can talk yourself into anything. Being an athlete, it doesn't take much, right?
Yep.
If I go there and I get three hits with a home run to left that I haven't been getting the last 5 days, guess where I'm going to eat until I stop getting hits? Jimmy John's.
We got a ton of texts, by the way. 590-590 is the text line. We'll get to them in a few minutes. A little bit of breaking news, Kevin, and I wanted to get your take on this. Of course, we saw the dugout clearing brawl between the Houston Astros and the Oakland Athletics. Alex Cintron, the Astros hitting coach, has been suspended for 20 games as a result of actions precipitating that brawl. I have not seen any reports on any player suspensions yet, but from all accounts, there was some pretty vile language used by Alex Cintron.
Somebody saying Cintron was saying things about people's mothers, right?
Yeah.
Those are fighting words. So, and during a pandemic, when you're, trying to be the big boy in the room, that's not things you want to do, is start calling people names and calling them out and tell them to come over here and get you some. That's, for me, I thought it would have been more. I was thinking 30 games, right? 20 games, I guess that's okay. But if you really wanted to set an example for a guy, especially a coach who's supposed to be that guy in the room, that leads by example.
Yeah.
I guess 20.
I got to tell you something, Kevin. I mean, look, and we're big Dusty Baker fans for sure.
Yeah.
But my goodness, there has to be a cultural issue with the Houston Astros. Like they have gone 3 years ago, people were talking about the way they played and how, they had it going on and they were making the right decisions. They were fun to watch, all this stuff. They seemed like everything they did turned out well. And yet I'm really getting the impression now behind the scenes, the place is a bit of a sewer behind
the
scenes.
Well, they're not winning. They're not winning now either, right? And all those things where you said their lineup could basically take them where they want to go. They're not hitting for whatever reason, right? No more of that banging on the trash can, right? Breaking balls coming, don't swing at it, that kind of thing. That's probably helping with them not being able to hit. So it's when you're not winning. I feel sorry for Dusty Baker, right? Dusty Baker, I don't think, asked for all of this, and he is trying to be, I don't want to say the father figure and all of that, but he wants to be the guy that's takes them to that next level and gets them past all of this. Hopefully for his sake, they can get a little bit of that. I just don't see it, right? Next year, when people are back in the stands, it ain't going to be worse. People yelling at them and holding up signs and throwing things at them, it's going to be even worse. So I don't know if I see a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to their reputations, right?
Yeah, the Yankees, by the way, have just called up Clint Frazier from their alternate training site. Giancarlo Stanton's gone on the injured list with a grade one hamstring strain. So Clint Frazier's called up. Did they call up Miguel and Duhar yesterday yet? I don't think they have.
I haven't seen that.
I'll tell you that. I mean, I know it's never going to happen, but boy, if I'm the Blue Jays, I could use that bat in the middle of my order someplace.
Yeah, I don't know if he moves the needle, right? We need a guy who can carry your team for a week. You're looking at him to do it. I don't know if he's.
Well,
I think they got Andrew.
His defense,
I think they already got Andrew Harris on the team.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. That's a great point. I'm just looking at his numbers. 2018, his fielding percentage was second worst among third basemen. Made the fourth most errors. He was the worst defensive third baseman. But
You already answered your question.
Yeah, I answer my question.
There you go.
They basically got him. But you know what? Again, we've talked about it. I still think at some point the Jays will need to add an impactful bat. It was interesting hearing Ross Atkins in his availability today talk about the issue of, and I think it was Ben Nicholson-Smith that asked the question, sort of as you approach the trade deadline, how do you judge minor league players who, haven't maybe have been at a team's training facility this year or are playing as part of that, whatever it is, not the taxi squad, but, the other roster. It was interesting hearing him talk about that. He said it's a new challenge, really, right? How do you account first of all, how do you account for the fact that you're, after the trade deadline, you're basically making a deal for a short time? Yep. But secondly, how do you account for minor leaguers who haven't been playing this year? And, you know, and it was interesting hearing Ross say that, you know, one of the things that people focus on is age. And essentially he said it gets to a certain point, or it gets to a certain age where if you're a minor leaguer, it's not good to not play for a year. You know, it gets to a point where people start 27, maybe not, right? Or 26, maybe not.
Out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. You know, you're not there. They forget about you. They don't know who you are. You know, exit velocities, how much do they depend on that? You know, that's a big deal, right? You can not have a scout go to a game and watch batting practice and get exit velocities off a guy's bat. We'll tell you so many things, whether he's mechanically sound, whether he's injured, all of these things, right, about that exit velocity. So that might be one of the things. But I wanted to ask you about when he said, take a competitive team to a winning team. How do you know when to start the ladder?
Okay,
how does your team tell you to start the ladder?
I got a very simple answer for that. It's something that I said at the start of the year. It's something I said last year. To me, Nate Pearson determines when I'm a winning team. When I look at Nate Pearson and he's winning a lot of games and he is my number one, then I'm ready to win.
Huh.
And I mean, I don't like to put pressure on him, but you know, Vladdy, Bo, Cavan, all those guys, Nate Pearson determines when this team is ready to win. Nate Pearson finishes this, you know, bastardized season and is the guy we think he's going to be, then I'm full bore next year. And I understand we got a CBA coming up. That's another issue. You got CBA negotiations coming up. You want to manage your window of opportunity. You know, you don't want to aim for, and I hate to bring this up, but you don't want to do what the Expos did in 1994 when everything was built towards winning in 1994. Everything lined up. Boom, you get a player strike. Your worst nightmare if you're the Blue Jays is having that happen.
But again, Kevin,
to me it's Nate Pearson. Nate Pearson tells me when it's go time.
Okay, how about this a little bit too? What if they're able to write Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s name in the lineup at first base every single day for like 80 games in a row?
Nope, I got
it. That would mean he's conditionally sound to do that every single day and that he's hitting.
That's fine, but I'm not ready to win until Nate Pearson is ready to be my ace. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, that's just interesting that he brought that up when he was asked the question.
It was.
And my question would be is how do you know when that is? Because right now they're competitive, right?
They're in
basically all of the games, but they're not either they don't know how to win or they're not ready to win.
Yeah. The other little snippet of news out of this, out of Ross Atkins' media availability, was that Ken Giles is going to have another examination, an MRI. There was no indication that they were doing that because he's felt more pain or anything. I got the impression more than anything else it was because he's progressed enough where they want to get a sense of where he is before they go ahead.
You saw him in the bullpen the other day when they were fanning around that he's taking dry throws off a mound. So if you're capable of doing that, you can add a ball to your hand. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's, you know, really, really super bad. So hopefully everything works out and they get him back.
Yeah, and, you know, and they want to be. And look, I credit the organization. You got to be careful with Ken Giles because he is going into his free agent year. And if I'm Ken Giles, I got to be careful.
We said this too many times. The guy that throws that hard and throws that many sliders, it's only a matter of time before he gets hurt.
Yep.
Your arm or your body just can't take that all the time.
We have a ton of texts. Give us more. 590, 590. We're talking about Jimmy Johns. We're talking about the Marcus Stroman trade. We got to talk about the Marcus Stroman trade. We've got guys wanting to know about superstitions. Hmm. And we have someone saying, and this is Terry from Toronto, hey, Kevin, I think Vladdy has found his Jimmy Johns with no issues.
Ooh. Be nice.
Be nice.
Be nice.
We'll get back to the text line. 590, 590. Baseball Central continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Something I wanted to talk about with Kevin Barker happened yesterday. Marcus Stroman opting out of the 2020 season, stating it was because of concern about COVID-19. Some of the things he'd seen in baseball with the St. Louis Cardinals. and that he had some family members he was concerned about being compromised. Now, a lot of people, and I make this point all the time, when it comes to COVID-19, I absolutely believe guys when they opt out. I only assume the best about guys when they make that decision. Of course, it was immediately pointed out on social media that the announcement came, well, it came after Marcus got credited with service time this year, which I have no problem with. I mean, teams leave guys down in the minors to control their service time. And it's a business, man. You do whatever you want to get it.
Yeah.
So I had no problem with that. But Kevin, you know, you look back at that deal now, Anthony Kay, Simeon Woods Richardson, who a lot of people like, for Marcus Stroman. That deal looks pretty damn good right now, considering the Mets got, what, 11 starts out of Marcus Stroman. And Anthony Kay, I don't know what he's going to be, but he's going to be something for me. He's going to be a back end of the rotation starter, or he's going to be in my bullpen. He's going to be something. And Simeon Woods Richardson, there isn't a scout in baseball that doesn't rave about this dude.
I think the Blue Jays are on something. You get some older guys at the end of their career that you can get up front, right, that can go three or four innings, and then you bring in like they're doing now with the Kays, the Barukis, the Hatches, the Simeon Woods Richardson. Why not, right? You don't overexpose the guys. The three guys that I mentioned are coming out of the bullpen with success don't have a third pitch. So making them a starter that second time through at the big league level, when people frown on that anyway, right? You're not trying to get them through two times in an order unless you're that elite stature who's been around forever and has done it before. So, listen, Marcus Stroman can do whatever he wants. That's when you're talking about family, you take care of your own, and that seems like that's what he's doing. But the trade-wise, listen – you have future now. You have it from both sides, too. You have lefties and righties with power and with movement and can strike out lefties and righties. So when you can have that, you know, it's we frowned on that. Why would you get rid of a guy like Marcus Stroman? Now it's, you know, they were thinking of the future, and now the future looks like it's here.
Yeah, and, you know, you look back to some of the trades that Mark and Ross have made. You know, I mean, I don't want to go through all of them. I mean, the Aaron Sanchez trade has kind of been a bit of a wash just because of what happened to Aaron with his injury. But you, man, I mean, the Ken Giles, the Osuna deal for Ken Giles, that kind of helped both teams. You know, Reese McGuire, I mean, I'm just saying they made the kind of deals you need to. It's almost like you need to give their deals a year to breathe or a year and a half to breathe before you judge it. But getting what they got from Marcus Stroman was – looks real good right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it seems like they were making trades for bulk. Sooner or later, if you get enough of them, sooner or later, one of them's going to make do, right? Well, you're going to see the benefits of reaping one of them. So that's what they've done here. An organization can never go wrong by loading it up with pitching.
Yep.
And, you know, that they might have, with Derek Fisher, five-tool, they might have missed the boat on that a little bit. But it is what it is, right? Yep. You're not always going to hit on every single one of them.
All right, we've got a couple of minutes left. I want to go to questions for Barker, 590-590. Kevin, I love this question. This is from Emily Limehouse. Hey, guys, I know Pete Walker's long been considered an elite pitching coach. I've always wondered if he could make or even want to make a successful transition to be a major league manager. Any insight? You know, there used to be this thing, right, Kevin, that great pitchers couldn't be managers, that sometimes pitching coaches couldn't make the transition to manager. John Farrell won World Series, the Boston Red Sox. But I got to ask you, because I've had other people ask me that. Everybody speaks highly of Pete Walker. Do you think Pete could manage?
Yeah, what does the manager have to do? He has to talk to the media, people like you that bombard him with question after question about his team.
Why he's got no problem with that.
He's tremendous at that, handling a pitching staff, right? And he has to have a little clout. He has to have been there and done it before, and people have to respect that, right? When he says, people stop and listen and do what he says. He has all three of those things. And, oh, by the way, if he ever does that, I'm going to ask him for a job because I would love to work under him as something because he's that type of person. He's a tremendous person. People like him. He's a tremendous pitching coach. He knows when he sees it, if it's not working right away, to give that person little things to fix, not big things, right? They're in the big leagues for a reason. It's like Vladdy. You can't make huge changes and make little small ones, right? So he's really good at that. I would love it. I think he would be tremendous at it. Now, obviously, he'd have to be in the right position, and he'd want to do that because, you know, there's a lot comes with being a manager. Ask Charlie, the heat he's been catching the first 13 games. So I think he'd be tremendous. Now, I may be a little biased because I'm really good friends with him, but he's a great human being. He's great with pitchers. He's great with the media. Hey, why not?
You know, that is the thing, though. It is a different world when you become manager because you automatically the buck for everything stops in your desk.
Yep.
Basically.
Well, if it's going bad, it's your fault.
It's your fault. You know,
yeah, it's your fault that Vladdy's swinging at a slider that didn't even reach the plate.
Yep.
It's your fault that Vladdy's trying to take third on a ball thrown to home. It's your fault why Rowdy Tellez is trying to steal from first base. See, it's these kind of things, mm-hmm. right? That probably is not your fault because those are mental mistakes. It's do you want to do that? That's the whole question. And, you know, that's something he'd have to answer. But to say that he could do it, I'm all for it. I think he'd be top notch at it.
I got to mention this because I like the name of the restaurant. Rick and Markham says, hey, if you guys are ever in South Carolina, go to Lizard's Thicket. It's better than Cracker Barrel. You've never been to how the hell have you never been to South Carolina?
I might have when my dad used to work a long time ago when I was a kid and I don't remember it. But if I'm ever there,
Lizard's Thicket
a cool
sounds
name.
Good. That is
oh,
a
it
great
sounds
place.
Tremendous. It sounds tremendous.
Yeah, shout
I'd
out
love to go.
Lizard's Thicket.
That's tremendous.
I mean, that sounds
What do you
like,
think they serve? Lizard?
I don't know. That sounds like the South, though, doesn't it?
It does. It's awesome.
It sounds like the South.
Don't be knocking on the South now.
No, I'm not. No, I'm just food, Southern food, no. Man, I got their menu right in front of me. Fried chicken livers. Oh, there you
go.
They don't have squirrel. You're a... Brandeo, stop it. God, that is such a... That's
squirrel.
The last time I heard someone make a cook squirrel reference in this show is when I said something about Colby Rasmus, about squirrels being good eating. That's awful. Barker, we'll talk tomorrow.
You promise?
I promise. We'll have a home opener to talk about. Don't forget.
Yes.
Don't forget, 6:30 tonight, first pitch in Buffalo. Writer's block is next. Lots of hockey talk ahead. Sean Avery, get the little beep sound ready. Sean Avery joins us.